Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts as always on the weekend show as well as your hosts throughout the week featuring our daily editorials and company updates, trying to keep all of you as up to date as we can on U.S. equity markets, key news and data points, as well as what's going on in the resource sector and driving down into some of the even junior companies in the resource sector by talking directly to management. You can hear all of our interviews on our website, kereport.com. I'm sure a lot of you are tuning in simply on our website or on our podcast, Corlin Economics Report. We're kicking off this weekend show with one of my favorite guests, Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, also editor of the Book Report. Peter, let's start off with the key data point that came out this week, the CPI data. Inflation data for the U.S., the number came in at 7.5% increase from a year earlier. This was at the upper boundary of the 7 to 7.6% consensus range. And I think even more importantly is inflation continues to grow in the U.S., even as we keep hearing from some central bankers and a lot of other commentators saying inflation's going to start dropping or it's definitely topping out. Fact of the matter is, inflation is staying extremely elevated. Let's start off with your outlook for inflation, Peter. Where do you stand on all the inflation coming out of the U.S. that continues to surprise to the upside?
So I've been talking about this building inflationary environment and pressures intensifying since 2020. But I do think on a rate of change basis that the February or March prints that we'll see in the coming 2 months will be the peak. And then just by the math of tougher comparisons, that rate of change will slow. Therefore, the question is, if I'm right, where do we settle out at? Where, to what extent does it slow? Keep in mind that pre-COVID, inflation rates were, call it 1% to 2% in the U.S. and call it globally. And that was a level of inflation that allowed central banks to do whatever they wanted to do and leverage to increase across the board in valuations and markets, whether it's bonds, stocks, or pieces of art or antique cars and so on, to inflate. I believe that inflation won't be getting back to that 1 to 2% level, certainly not this year, and I'll deal with next year. But I think a 3 to 4% rate is more likely. Now, if you break out inflation into its two components of goods and services, the service side will likely continue to accelerate, particularly because rents in the calculation of CPI are still dramatically undercounting reality. The government said that rents are up about 4% year over year, when according to apartmentlist.com, they're up 18% for new leases, or they were in 2021, and they're probably up about 8 to 10% for renewal of existing leases. So the government telling us that that inflation, or at least either whether it's owner's equivalent rent or rent of a primary residence, is up about 4%. It's not a very accurate measure. Now on the flip side, you have goods prices, which are now rising at the fastest pace since 1975. That should start to come down in its rate of change. Both because of, again, tougher comparisons, but also some modest signs that in the next couple of months, we'll see some easing on the supply side. We'll hopefully see some more semiconductors and more auto production and so on. I think net, when you bring them together, we're still going to be, as I said, settling in at a higher rate of gain. Again, even though we're going to be peaking within the next couple of months.
Well, Peter, I think there's a lot of inflation that's underreported in the way the government does the statistics. Because if you look at, like you mentioned, rents, but even the senior living care, healthcare expenses. If you go to the grocery store, I was just watching a piece where they showed so many food products up between 30 and 60%. So in a lot of people's daily life, it's hitting them a lot harder than what we're even seeing in the 7.5% in the CPI reading. But regardless of even if the inflation metrics do start getting disinflation and tapering down, is it possible that the Fed is starting so late in the cycle and where the yield curve is so flat already and they're so far literally behind the curve that even their policy effects from the first few hikes really aren't going to do much to tame inflation?
Well, the yield curve is flattening in response to what they think the Fed is going to do. So the Fed is just following what the bond market's already priced in. I mean, as of today, or today being Friday, I know this is over the weekend, but Jim Buller, who's a voting member of the Fed, said that he wants to have the Fed funds rate, he wants to raise it by 100 basis points by July 1st. Well, there's three meetings between now and July 1st, which implies that he wants to go 50 at one of those meetings. So now we have about an 80% chance that the Fed hikes 50 basis points in March. So the flattening is because of what they think the Fed is going to do. But it's also what usually happens in a rate hiking cycle is the curve flattens because they assume growth is going to slow. But what is interesting here is, yes, the curve is flattening, but rates across the board are going higher. So the 10-year yield at above 2% is, yeah, we have a flattening yield curve, but yields are going up across the board. And that means the average 30-year mortgage rate is now heading to 4%. So it's sort of a knockout across the board, where maybe in previous instances of Fed flattening, that the longer end yield didn't go up at the same time, like in the mid-2000s when the Fed was hiking and long rates stayed low. This time around, yields going up across the board, even though the shorter end's going up quicker than the longer end.
So, Peter, dealing with inflation, there's also the consumer side of things. And I've asked a number of people this, is the consumer is obviously getting squeezed here, although wages are rising. But fact of the matter is, and we're even seeing it in credit card debt is starting to increase. Actually, it started a number of months ago to increase. How can the consumer stay this, I guess, optimistic or spend this much money to keep inflation staying high when it seems like they are really getting squeezed across the board?
Well, if you look at the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence Index, that is at a 10-year low. So they're not optimistic. They're worried about this rising their cost of living relative to their wages. They're worried about falling real inflation-adjusted wages, and that their earnings are going less further than it did prior to this inflation bout. So that is certainly a cause for concern and a reason why, you know, economic growth will slow. And then you throw in, of course, the margin pressures and the higher labor costs on the corporate side, which either the company is going to try to offset it via price increases, or they're going to have to eat it via tighter profit margins. And that in a way potentially could slow growth too, because that disrupts expansion plans and so on. So I think net of all of this is that we're entering into a stagflationary type situation.
Well, Peter, that makes me think of, you know, the 1970s and the high energy prices, which we absolutely have. And aside from the high wages, the energy markets are also pressuring all companies. So whether it's freight or transportation, or it's just another silent tax on everything that slows down growth. Is it possible that the Fed is hiking these rates into a slowing growth period where it's actually going to potentially cause a recession in a year or two?
There's no doubt that they'll tighten us into recession, but I don't think keeping rates at zero is an alternative. I think that the Fed forgot the lesson learned in the 1970s, is that you can't put employment growth ahead of inflation, because unless you have stable prices, you'll never have a healthy economy and full employment. So there is, I get your question is almost looking for, is there a way out? And there is no way out, because if they do nothing, then inflation just embeds itself and becomes a bigger problem. And if they do something, well, then growth is going to slow, markets will fall, and then we are in trouble too. So it is a pick your poison type situation. But as an entity that where stable prices are a key part of what they do, they need to get some credibility back, and they need to, you know, give us some positive interest rates again. We're certainly not going to get positive real interest rates at any point throughout this rate increase. So even if they hike 100 basis points or 200 basis points, real interest rates will still be negative. They'll still be considered easy. You know, prior to this time period, real interest rates used to be 3 to 4%. The Fed funds rate used to be 3 to 4% above the rate of inflation. And like I said, we'll be lucky if we get back to zero at some point. So yeah, there's going to be pain ahead, but I don't think that the alternative should be, okay, the Fed should just do nothing and have their fingers crossed that inflation falls, because, you know, we don't want to slow growth. But yeah, a lot of this inflation is because of the supply side, but the Fed and fiscal policy have been pedal to metal on the demand side.
Yes, they have been, but so has really the rest of the world for quite that time, especially after that COVID breakdown. Let's tie this a bit more into the markets too, because last year, pretty easy year for anyone invested in any of the indexes, as they all seem to just consistently go up week after week, month after month. However, once we turn the corner into 2022, and even a little bit before turning that corner for some of those high-flying tech stocks, we did start to see some weakness. And January actually was a pretty bad month for a lot of the broad averages, again, compared to what we saw in 2021. Now, it does make sense, right? Markets pull back when a lot of the free money, or at least some of it, is getting pulled away. But what is your outlook for these markets, Peter? Because as much as the markets have pulled back, they haven't been in a free fall.
I think what we've seen to this point is, and it really started last year and sort of spread out into the bigger names in January, was last year people started to question valuations, particularly starting last summer when the Fed said that they're talking about tapering, because there's nothing like a monetary tightening cycle to make people pay attention to valuations. Whereas in the opposite, when money's flowing like the Colorado River, investors can be valuation agnostic. So what happens from here is, what does the economy do now? How does the economy respond to higher interest rates? How does the economy respond to wider credit spreads and lower stock prices? Because if there is a, which they will likely be, a negative economic impact, well, then you have falling multiples tied to falling earnings, and that creates a bigger problem.
Yeah, it's interesting, Peter, because just this last earnings season, there was a lot more focus put on valuations, something we hadn't heard in a couple of years, where valuations didn't matter. But what we're seeing now is a whole cadre of new investors that got into the markets and opened trading accounts in 2020 and 2021 when they're stuck at home. Many people decided not to go back to work and become traders. Other people just started investing for the first time. And markets had gotten really frothy. And as we've seen over the last few months, even before this year, the calendar turned over, the meme stocks got hit. Some of the Russell 2000 and small cap stocks got hit. The growth stocks got hit. And even the cryptos took it in the pants for a while. So there was a lot of investors that probably had a lot of capital wiped out, and this is their first bigger corrective move. Do you think it's possible that we won't see as much of the rotation from sector to sector, and that actually there'll be more hesitancy and maybe a little bit more volatility as some of that money went to money heaven and got evaporated? Do you think that that's going to affect just the way these markets behave moving forward?
Well, when you look at the retail investor, you know, if you think the bull market started in March 2009, it took them 12 years to decide to get involved. You know, the retail investor got blown up in 2000 to 2002. Then many of them switched to flipping homes in the mid-2000s and, you know, rode out 12 years of a bull market before they decided to start trading meme stocks through Robinhood. I think that a lot of those people are probably going back to their day job, and markets are going to go back to trading the way that it did beforehand, with less of this short-term trading mentality, get-rich-quick type investing, which is, it's actually really not investing. It's just speculating. But yeah, I think that some of those people that had a good month or two last year, they're probably not doing that anymore. And if they are, they're probably getting burned. So what that means to the broader trading, I don't know. I think the monetary tightening will lead to higher volatility regardless. I think people just need to be a lot more careful about the things that they invest in nowadays.
So, Peter, what's your overall assessment of general sentiment for at least some of the larger investors that you chat with? Not so much, I guess, negative on some of these growth stocks because the market's telling us that, but where they have maybe some confidence in terms of a longer-term investment or something that is a bit more stable. And let's be honest with ourselves, this different environment that we're going to have this year.
Well, I'll tell you what we're doing. I mean, I think you need to have a different playbook for the next couple of years. And what will work in the next couple of years will be different than what has worked over the past couple of years, or even the last 5 to 10 years. And that means not having as much exposure to the growthy parts of the market and technology, having more value, having more international markets. I mean, if you look at year to date, for example, two of the cheapest markets in the world are up this year. That's the FTSE in London, and that's the Hang Seng in China. We came in this year with both markets trading at about 10 to 11 times earnings with 3 to 4% type dividend yields. So there are ways of outperforming, but you know that trade didn't work for years, but now it's going to work. We know commodities have traded well, and that should continue to work, even though if the demand side gets hurt, that can be an issue, but the supply side is still very much constrained. So again, I think investors need to change playbooks if they're going to be keeping their head above water in this kind of a very difficult market that we're entering into.
Peter, what's your take on the precious metals market? Because a lot of people thought when we saw these higher inflation readings, that would actually be a boon for gold and possibly silver. We didn't see much of a reaction at all, kind of maybe more trending sideways in a channel, but it also hasn't fallen out of bed. And then the general narrative is that, you know, when rate hiking cycles start, that it's less attractive to be in gold. But then when we look historically, rate hiking cycles actually help gold. So a lot of people are puzzled, confused, not sure where to go. What's your outlook on the precious metals?
So we know that in this move that gold and silver topped out in, call it August of 2020. I think it's pretty fair to say that one of the reasons why it's so underperformed in 2021 is because of the belief either that, yeah, the Fed's right, inflation is transitory, or if they're wrong, well, the Fed's going to come to the rescue and save the day and stamp down on inflation. But I think what we learned is it's not transitory. And here we are printing a 7.5% CPI. And at least for the next month, the Fed is still buying assets and they will still have rates at zero. So I think that gold started to trade better really the day after the December FOMC meeting, even when the Fed said, yeah, we're going to double the pace of tapering, because people realized, man, they're really, really behind the curve here. And real interest rates are going to stay pretty negative for a long time. And even though real rates have actually risen and the dollar has risen, gold and silver trade pretty well. Because if you take it from here, what happens is, okay, well, the Fed is either going to hike us into recession, which means that they're going to immediately back off and probably start cutting, which would be good for gold and silver, or they're not going to be able to catch up to inflation, and that'll be good for gold, just as it was in the 1970s when they were hiking, just as it was in the mid-2000s when they were hiking. And we all know that gold bottomed in December 2015 when Janet Yellen started hiking for the first time in 7 years, or I should say the first time after having rates zero for 7 years. So I think that, you know, counterintuitively, gold and silver traded poorly last year with high inflation. And this year it's trading great with still high inflation, but rising rates and rising real rates and a rising dollar. But I think that for the reasons I stated, that could be one of the reasons why.
Peter, to that point, do you think there's been a change in the market or perception of the investors that are investing now away from gold, getting distracted by other assets? In turn, almost the shine is off gold because there's a different breed of investors here. And quite frankly, they just don't have that loyalty to the precious metals that some of the older generations do.
I guess that's very possible. But, you know, when you compare the current generation with older ones, you know, gold's been around for 5,000 years. It's a lot of generations. So there are a lot of lessons learned through living 5,000 years.
That's a very good point, Peter. But you know what? There just does seem to be at least a little shift, even in terms of my friends who are a bit younger that just don't seem to care about that sector, even though they see some other sectors that have the same narrative, like cryptos, and they're saying, oh, well, I just like cryptos better, even though they have the same arguments behind them. But to your point, gold has been around a lot longer. Quick question when it comes to the gold mining stocks. I know you don't follow them too closely, but we do need to address the fact that the stocks really have underperformed the underlying gold price. Any thoughts on why that has been the case?
Yeah, they've certainly been dreadful, unfortunately. And I wish I had a good answer. To me, I think it's just total apathy. I mean, these companies are printing money hand over fist, at least those that are producing, with all-in sustainable cost of $1,000 to $1,200. So I'm pretty shocked at how poorly they trade, but I don't see that being sustainable if the price of gold and silver trade as well as they do and continue to do so.
Well, just one more on the commodity side of things, Peter. The commodities have had fits and starts. Different ones have run at different times. We saw some big moves in copper, aluminum, iron, nickel, zinc, oil and gas have done great. But with this kind of environment where we still have persistent high inflation, but maybe inflation that's going to start tapering down some, but we also have slowing growth, are there any commodities that have your eye for 2022? Any that you think maybe are a little overheated and may pull back? What's your view of the landscape of the commodities?
So I've been bullish on oil and gas stocks since late 2020. And I do admit that I'm struggling right now with how long to stay in this trade. You know, on one hand, I see all the supply pressures that will keep prices elevated and the lack of investment. You know, politicians still beating up on anybody who produces fossil fuels. But on the other hand, you know, worried about, let's just say we in this synchronized global monetary tightening that we're in, and that slows growth and what that means for the demand side. But then I go back to, okay, well, let's look at China, for example, who is, you know, obviously one of the biggest consumers of oil. What happens if they get off this zero COVID policy or COVID goes away? That economy starts to rebound and recover and people start traveling again and living their life again over there, then that would be a huge demand booster. So I go back and forth. I do think that over the next couple of years, prices will continue to go higher, but I can't discount the possibility of a correction first. I think with agriculture, I'm more confident that prices will stay high. Predicting the demand for food is definitely a bit easier, even though you can obviously produce more crops every year and not have the same supply challenges. But I think that you know, there's still pockets of growth still left in fertilizer stocks, to use that as an example. We know copper is hugely important, and but copper still will be subject to, you know, any lapses in demand over the next year or two, even though the supply side is obviously very tight. So it's I'm trying to balance it because I know that the commodity rally is certainly not in its early stages after the run that we've seen, but I'm not sure how far we are in the game, which I'm still bull, but I don't want to be caught with in a downdraft, if that makes any sense.
Peter, I think that makes perfect sense. This is not a market to be overly aggressive with because of the change in policy, monetary policy, that is, that we are seeing this year. And the fact that the Fed is going to be hiking into most likely a slowing economy. Inflation might be coming down, yes, but also a flattening yield curve. It's very interesting to see how the markets are going to react and what is going to drop fastest, because it does seem like the risk is more to the downside here than markets getting out of hand to the upside. That's just what happens when we do have tighter monetary policy. But Peter, it's great chatting with you, buddy. Always enjoy having you on the show, and I always enjoy reading over your emails and all the other interviews you do on different media sources. You're great to have on our show. I know everyone else appreciates your time. So again, thank you for taking time on this weekend show, and I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate having me on. You too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.